I'd like to welcome everyone to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon. We have two cases being orally argued, one at 1:30 and another one at 2:30. We will take a break in between in case there's anybody here on the 2:30 case. Before we get started, I will introduce the panel that you have. To my left is Justice Brian Walker. To my right is Justice Dabney Basil, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. I understand that the council have checked in, and so without any further ado, we'll call the case.
The court will now call Texas Health Harris Medical Hospital versus John Davis. You may introduce the court. Mr. Grant Blaze to argue for the appellant, and Mr. Mark Sutton to argue for the appellee.
Thank you. You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. There are quite a few issues that are on appeal in this case, but I think the fundamental question, and I think the fundamental issue that is at play in this particular case is whether or not it was proper to admit CMS conditions of participation regulations codified in the Code of Federal Regulations to be used as evidence of a standard of care, the hospital's right of control over independent contractors, and then the hospital's alleged failure to exercise that right of control over its independent contractors.
I've got a general question for you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it your position that because the nurses were contractors, or that the hospital has just no liability whatsoever, that once you have a contractor, that the hospital's just out of the game when it comes to liability?
No, Your Honor, that's not what I'm saying, but I am saying that they do not have, as if they are truly independent contractors, if they truly are, we do not have the obligation or the duty to supervise their provision of medical care to patients. As a matter of fact, Texas law is clear on that. There are certain fundamental duties that a hospital has directly to the patient for which they can be held directly liable, but there's not an obligation under Texas law to supervise or control an independent contractor. And in fact, hospitals cannot exercise that control. There's a corporate practice of medicine issue here with regard to that. And so Texas law is clear. Hospitals, you can't direct the clinical care provided by a physician or an allied health provider who's an independent contractor. That does not mean that a hospital just escapes liability, but it does mean that it does not have, and what the CMS regulations here did is essentially say, whatever the nurses did, you are responsible for that. And that is fundamentally against Texas law. And the cases that have addressed application of CMS regulations to state tort law medical malpractice cases, there have been none in Texas, but every one of those, the jurisdictions that have addressed that issue and that question have universally said, no, that's not the case. These are conditions of participation that involve federal oversight and whether or not surveys conducted by CMS will allow then that hospital to receive or to treat and receive Medicaid patients. It has nothing to do with an applicable standard of care. The CMS regulations don't provide for a standard of care. They are essentially a legal edict that says you are responsible for contracted services.
Well, I get your position on what the case law is in Texas, and I mean, but you admit this is a case of first impression, and this is no Texas courts up until this point have looked at these CMS conditions of participation in the way that they were handled in this trial. You agree with that, correct?
I would agree that there are no cases in Texas that have addressed the application of CMS regulations to standards of care or agency questions that are presented here.
What do you think about this? Okay. So if your argument, obviously, is that it simply has to do with whether or not there's Medicare or Medicaid that applies, and therefore we're looking at apples and oranges, and I've read the cases in the other jurisdictions that you cite, but one might argue that Medicare, Medicaid is essentially kind of a baseline for a standard of care. I mean, you're talking about people who are getting their medical benefits essentially paid for, their medical care paid for by the federal government, and in kind of a very abstract idea would be, look, if it's good enough for Medicare, it's good enough for our hospitals in Texas?
Well, what I would say to that, Your Honor, is the Medicare regulations don't set forth a minimum standard of care, and that's one of the problems that we have. The CMS regulations don't say, here's how you treat a patient at all. All they say is, if you want to participate in the Medicare Medicaid program hospital, you have to meet our regulations with regard to how you set up particular services, how you do certain things, and you can't, and you are also responsible for the contracted services in that realm. It does not address, though, here's how you treat a patient. How you treat a patient addresses medical, clinical standards of care that Texas law is clear. Hospitals have a direct patient physician-patient relationship or hospital-patient relationship, and there are particular standards of care applicable to hospitals. There are also standards of care applicable to physicians and allied healthcare providers, and the hospital is not responsible for the alleged negligence of an independent contractor. And to illustrate the problem with admitting the CMS regulations, it's kind of a duality here. And in their briefs, here's what they admit. They admit they asserted what is known as a Redinger claim, okay, which is essentially you can be responsible, or you can be negligent if you actually exercise control over an independent contractor. The law basically says if you exercise an actual right of control, then you have an obligation to exercise that control reasonably. Okay. Well, in this particular case, we did not exercise control over the clinical practice of the CRNAs. That was their problem. That was their what they've done is they tried to invert Redinger and say you fail to exercise control over your independent contractors. That duty to exercise control is imputed to you by virtue of the CMS regulations. That's the exact opposite of Redinger. So what they're saying is you had an obligation to control and you didn't. Okay. Because you failed to exercise control, you have a direct you are directly liable for their actions under Redinger. Having said that, they also, and as fact, they just submitted, I guess, for the court's review, In Re Gamble, which was a non-delegable duty case. And what they basically said there is, federal law imposes this obligation on you. And because federal law imposes this obligation on you, you cannot delegate that duty. Therefore, you are responsible for implementation of that duty. That is a vicarious liability claim. So they have us coming and going. And it's all about legal responsibility. It's not about what the standard of care is. There was only one quote-unquote standard of care, and that was the NSPG 030401, and we can get into that later. But what they're basically saying is, once the CMS regulations are introduced into evidence, the distinction and the relationship between the hospital is moot. You are responsible for what happens down at a hospital, regardless of who's doing it, regardless of whether it's an employee, regardless of whether it's an independent contractor, regardless of whether it's direct liability or vicarious liability. You're done. You are responsible for their actions. And that clearly confused the jury. And not only did it confuse the jury, it was expressly advised by counsel to the jury that was the law. If you look at that, I'm not going to regurgitate the testimony. It's set forth in my briefing. But essentially what they said is, you can't avoid liability, hospital. You're trying to shift blame to the CRNAs. You're trying to shift blame to Sundance. You can't do it. The law says you can't. Well, the CMS regulations say I can't relative or vis-a-vis the hospital and CMS, but Texas law, which applies in this particular case, absolutely does not provide for that. And that really is the problem here. There was no way of winning. And there was no way. The hospital is prepared to defend its actions, to defend its policies, to defend its conduct. But essentially what happened here is you had two clinical practitioners. They're the only two practitioners that touched the patient, that provided treatment to the patient. They were clearly independent contractors. We did not have an obligation contractually or legally to exercise control over how they provided the clinical care. But they were found not negligent, and the hospital was found negligent. And it's easy to understand why when you're talking about what they've essentially argued, what they essentially argued to the jury and what they addressed in cross-examination of the witnesses is that, well, the law says you can't, you are responsible for these contracted services. You are responsible. You are responsible.
You know, there's kind of three things that are swirling in my head, okay? You've basically made the position that their position is that, or at least, I guess, under just current jurisprudence, that the only way there's any kind of liability is if there's, you know, I guess just insufficient training, that it all has to do with training. And of course, I think really what the plaintiff in this case, Appellee's position more was that there is a standard of care issue and that they were able to use these regulations or whatever you want to call this, the conditions to help kind of conceptualize and make the jury understand what that standard of care is. And then you said it has nothing to do with the standard of care, but their whole point, and it's cited in your brief, is that I think the relative probative part of this conditions is where it says you have medical conditions of participation and according to acceptable standards of practice, irrespective of whether the services are provided directly by hospital employees or indirectly by contract. And their position is, because this is in some ways just kind of a baseline here, because this is just the bare minimum just for hospitals to get Medicaid and Medicare benefits, they have to make sure that this stuff is taken care of. In this situation, it was something that the trial court could, within their discretion, allow the jury to see because it gave them some kind of idea of how to get there.
Here's where I would disagree with Your Honor, and that is, again, what you just read is not a standard of care. Nothing in that regulation said, here's how you take care of a patient. What it just basically said is that you've got these accepted standards of care as it pertains to hospitals and contracted providers. Vis-a-vis Medicare, we're going to come look at your hospital and see how things are going. Here's what Texas law says. If you have an independent contract, if any deficiencies in training relative to the CRNAs was a Sundance responsibility because Sundance was their employer. The hospital was not their employer. Now, they could argue, they could have brought this claim. They could have brought, you were negligent in hiring Sundance. Brought a negligent hiring. We are prepared to defend that claim, but that's not what this claim is. This is not a negligent hiring claim. This is you have the duty, you have the obligation. Texas law doesn't say that, but CMS says you have the obligation, and therefore this failure falls on you, hospital.
Well, and the end result would be really problematic for a lot of hospitals, not talking about this case, but just talking about they would lose the ability to treat people who are receiving Medicaid and Medicaid benefits. I mean, this is significant.
If CMS regulations were allowed to be used as a standard of care in Texas, you would fundamentally alter agency law. Yeah, you would fundamentally alter how hospitals operate. You would fundamentally you would be saying federal law trumps state law because state tort law is clear. And that is, you are not responsible for the negligence of an independent contractor. You're not responsible. That's what Texas law says. CMS, a federal regulation that doesn't really even speak to what those standards are, says, well, no, you are, hospital. You're responsible. This is a non-delegable duty / inverse Redinger claim that, again, it fundamentally would change the Pandora's box that it was would open, it would be interesting. But the bottom line is, if you look at what CMS regulations are, what they're intended to do, they're not intended to do what was done here. They're not a standard of care. First of all, again, there's no clinical standards at all. There's also not a, you now have an obligation to control an independent contractor. That's not what they were intended to do. And in the absence of CMS regulations, what would be admissible in evidence, what responsibility the hospitals would have, would be direct, and that is what hospital under current and established theories of liability did you do wrong that may or may not have approximately caused this? But that's not how this case was tried. This case was tried by virtue of Hospital, you failed your independent contractors by not supervising them. Hospital, you failed your independent contractors for not doing what their employer should have done, and you are responsible, therefore. Well, that's just not what the law is, and we would be changing it. And the effects and import of that, I mean, I don't have enough time to talk about it, but you could sit down for hours and talk about whether or not that's something that should be done here.
Yeah. I mean, one of the problems you've got going for you is this is an abuse of discretion standard, and, you know, and we have to give a lot of deference to trial courts, and you know, when we start getting into appeals where appellants are arguing relevance and they're arguing 403, it just, well, that's fine.
I would briefly say this is a question of law. This is application of applicable law, and do the CMS regulations change that?
Thank you. Response, Mr. Sutterth.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. If it pleases the court, I'm Mark Sutterth. I'm here on behalf of the appellee/cross-appellant John Davis. The judgment should be affirmed in part and modified and rendered to provide for the immediate and full payment of all future medical expenses with no reduction for the unpled negligence of Sundance Anesthesia. A few things I'd like to respond to while they're fresh in everybody's mind. One being Redinger, Owens versus Litton, which is in our brief, quote, it is the right of control, not the actual control, that gives rise to a duty to see that an independent contractor performs its work in a safe manner. Citing Redinger.
The appellant tells us that you're trying to work a sea change in Texas law. Are you?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because we are not trying, number one, he says that what we're trying to change the law is to make the hospital vicariously liable for clinical malpractice committed by the practitioners based on Medicaid regulations. We're not at all. Your Honor, the Medicaid regulation in this case, the way it came in is that our expert, Dr. Abukar, testified that the governing body, that the standard of care requires leaders of a hospital to exercise quality assurance over the entire hospital, including its contractors. She said this has been a standard for years all over the nation, and she cited the regulation which says that the governing body must be responsible for services furnished in the hospital, whether or not they're furnished under contracts. And she specifically explained what this means is, by responsibility doesn't mean liability, and this court has held responsibility doesn't equal liability. Responsibility means duty.
If she'd said, all I'm relying on are the CMS regulations, would that have been an adequate basis for her opinion?
It might have been, but that's not what she said. She said, absolutely, that's not what I'm relying on. She said, I'm relying on years of experience managing safety programs in hospitals. She said, I'm looking at Texas law. I'm looking at all these reports and studies that have been done. And basically, Your Honor.
And the CMS conditions.
And of course, it's, you know, I think, you know, we pled that it creates non-delegable duty. The court disagreed. Didn't get submitted that way. If we'd lost, I might be appealing on that basis, but it's always been the law in Texas that when a statute or even a court order imposes a duty on a particular entity for purposes of public safety, that's a non-delegable duty. But in this case, it's not. That's not what happened. The jury found 40% liability for Sundance, which was Dr. Leach, 60% liability for the hospital, which included the director of surgery, who said it was my job to monitor these contractors and I didn't do it, to the head of the hospital, who said it was my job to ensure Joint Commission compliance and I didn't know Joint Commission actually complied the labeling of drugs to be verified, the director of surgery, or of the pharmacy, who was in charge of hospital policies for safe medications, who said we have no policies at all that apply to independent contractors because we don't have the right to tell them what to do. That was the first deposition I took. That's why we had to take this route. That was the hospital's first line of defense. We have no obligation because it's an independent contractor. No, if it's a non-delegable duty, so I'm conceding for purposes of argument in this case, and I guess it's not, all a non-delegable duty means is you're vicariously liable for what your contractors did. If it's not a non-delegable duty, it doesn't mean you no longer have a duty, as you referenced, Your Honor. I mean, if it's a non-delegable duty, the question becomes, well, did you exercise your control appropriately? Not just did you hire the wrong person, but did you exercise appropriate oversight? Did you give them the right instructions on what to do? Should you have known, would a reasonable and prudent hospital have known that these people weren't complying with what your own hospital standards required you to do? Now, this court held in Denton many years ago that it is a hospital's direct duty to formulate the policies and procedures that apply to contractors as well as employees. That's been held many times. Denton versus LaCroix is one of the main cases that everybody cites. That's in the pattern jury charge for that proposition.
The hospital actually had a policy in that case.
The hospital, Your Honor, had a policy that if they had applied it, would have satisfied the Joint Commission. They didn't have a policy that says you're supposed to double check your verification when the person who draws it up is not the one administering it. They said you just can't do that. They said all drugs shall be drawn up one drug at a time just before administration. That's what the standard of care, that complies with the standard of care, but they didn't require the contractors to follow it. And Your Honors, requiring contractors to safely handle and label the hospital's medication containers does not infringe on the corporate practice of medicine, for goodness sakes.
Let me stop you and ask you a question real quick. There were a couple of things. I mean, so what's your response to this idea that essentially, because there was no training connection, that there's really no negligence, there's no liability?
We never said they should have trained the CRNAs. What we said is they should have had a policy in place that was communicated, just like the Joint Commission says there has to be if you want to be accredited, that says you need to safely label your medications as per the details that we discussed. If it's not going to be you giving it, it needs to be two people that check it. The testimony was the reason that's a rule is because that's a fraught. Lots of errors happen when that occurs. And it's always, but you don't have to double check your medications. You know, Dr. Leach said, well, that would just be not convenient for us. You just have to do it the way they do it now. They change their practice and they do it one at a time. And if they'd been complying with the standard of care, that's probably what they would have done. There's clearly evidence of proximate cause, contrary to what they said in their brief. Both CRNAs and Dr. Leach said we would have followed the policy if the hospital had told us that. No, but the poor CRNAs, they said they didn't find them negligent. Nobody told the CRNAs that was even a rule. They had no idea.
You know, one thing that the appellant hasn't addressed yet, maybe they're not at all orally today, but they briefed on is y'all were given essentially the jury the ability to decide a legal question or look at a legal question when this was put forward before them.
Your Honor, it is perfectly and even required to tell the jury what the duty is. How can a jury decide a duty was breached without knowing what the duty is? This court in Denton versus LaCroix repeatedly held, they say it about three times, the evidence is sufficient to support the finding of a duty. That was an issue in Denton versus LaCroix. The evidence is sufficient to support the jury's finding that a duty exists to exercise control to be sure that an anesthesiologist personally supervised all aspects of anesthesia care.
So your position is essentially that the jury was given some legal direction, but they still had a fact question to answer.
Well, of course they had a fact. Yes, Your Honor. The jury was told that, like they're always told, that we're required to come in with an expert in a Med-Mal case and tell them what the standard of care requires, what the duty is, is the responsibility of a hospital.
But LaCroix described the situation it confronted as just being a classic battle of the experts.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where there was really no challenge to the bases of the expert's opinion. One expert said the cow was white, one expert said the cow was black for the jury to resolve.
I'm a little hard of hearing. I think I heard the question.
That's all right. I'm a little foggy voice today.
But if I heard the question, Your Honor, this is an issue that is a classic battle of the expert. We had Dr. Abukar come in and say this is what, but the reason it wasn't truly a battle of experts, Your Honor, is because they didn't really have an expert that came in and disputed any of this. Because we showed them the law, like you said, they couldn't win. Their experts had to concede. Yeah, that is his duty.
Let me ask you about, you quote Dr. Abukar on page 9 and 10 of your brief.
Yes.
And it looks like the quote on top of page 10 said, the basis of my opinion is training experience, numerous medication, safety, leadership, and experience. But it looks like she's relying particularly on the CMS. So why isn't what she's saying above and beyond the CMS just her ipsy-dixit?
Well, she said a lot of things that aren't in CMS that are above and beyond and are just, it's the qualified opinions of a knowledgeable medical expert. Your Honor, there's not a standard of care Bible out there. The closest thing we have to a standard of care Bible, I guess, is the Joint Commission standards and the Medicare standards. But that's the whole point. That's why you need a testifying qualified expert in a medical malpractice case.
Sir.
Because that's who defines a standard of care. It's a classic battle of experts. And not only did their experts agree, Your Honor, their attorney completely, and I won't read it all, but he acknowledged the duty repeatedly to the court and said this is a direct duty the hospital owes. It's not even proper to submit Dr. Leach to the jury because this is a duty the hospital owes to have proper policies and procedures in place. And again, Your Honor, it doesn't affect clinical care to say you're supposed to label your medication containers properly and double check. But this court and others have held, like in Denton, the hospital had a duty regarding policies involving pre-anesthesia evaluation and supervision. This court in Cheshire said a hospital has a duty to read policies involving conscious sedation and PEG insertion. The Air Shields case out of Waco, a hospital has a duty over the policies involving the administration of supplemental oxygen to infants. You can have policies and procedures that touch on clinical care without violating the corporate practice of medicine, so anesthesiologists have some independent under corporate practice of medicine to say we're not going to handle drugs safely, we're not going to comply with the requirements of the Joint Commission for how hospitals are supposed to handle and store the hospital's medications for the hospital's patients. That's not the law.
Let me ask you another question, kind of a shift gears, kind of. You know, you said that the doctor essentially talked about CMS and then plus, you know, there's other things that she discussed. And I noticed, you know, one thing in the appellant's brief is in one way they say that the CMS conditions had nothing to do with the ultimate jury questions that were submitted ultimately in determining this case. But then they turn around and say, believe that there was error because they did receive these conditions and they shouldn't receive these conditions and from their perspective. Are you willing to concede? You might not be able to answer this at all, but do you think that the jury would have still gone exactly the way they went had they never received the CMS conditions in this case?
Absolutely. There's plenty of evidence to that effect.
Now, they would obviously argue that...
Speculation, I guess, but there's plenty of evidence that they could have.
Well, and they would obviously argue that y'all put it in for a reason, right? And you asked the court to admit it for a reason. But you still believe without it, same result.
We put on the biggest mountain of evidence we can in every case, Your Honor, but there was so much evidence. I want to spend my time on where you want to spend your time. I want to just, if I have any time at all, it's very important on our appeal. Two issues. First, this future medical expense, and I hope I briefed it well, and I hope you can tell from the exhibit that I filed, you know, they basically want you, like they wanted the trial court, to just say, well, when the jury said this is the amount which, if paid now in cash, would compensate for future medicals, that's not really a present value number because it doesn't match any of the numbers we heard the experts say were present value. So let's just assume this is most consistent with this non-present value number. It's $600,000 off or $300,000 off. But let's say it's most consistent with that number. Maybe it's $80,000. The numbers are all getting out of my head. I apologize. But, Your Honors, what I showed on this is here's exactly how they came up with a present value number. They took the present value life care plan of $7,008,799, and they took the average life expectancy. Our experts said 9 years. The defense said 6. They cut it to 7.5. They reduced that $7,008,799 down to 7.5 years, and you get it, if you round it to two significant decimal places, to the exact dollar. There were Lockheed engineers on this jury. That's why they did this math and came up with a number like $928. And both times the Texas Supreme Court has addressed this, in both Regent Care and Verlar, they said that is an abuse of discretion. To take the jury's present valued number and spread it over time, that's a double discount.
But Verlar also says that if the trial court could reasonably craft a claim payment plan, it was required to do so.
Yes, based on the evidence and based on the request of the defendant and the evidence the defendant presented, they could have crafted a payment plan. And, but, and Your Honor, both in Regent Care and Verlar, in both cases, the court refused to structure it over time. And the Supreme Court in Regent Care said, that's right, affirmed, if you'd done it, it would have been an abuse of discretion.
So because your theory is that that we can calculate that the jury, the number the jury came up with is a present value number. I mean, that's the essence of what you're saying.
What I'm saying is, Your Honor, is that the defendants did not make a proper request and provide evidence showing how it could be done, and the court did not enter any finding showing that what she was ordering was consistent with the jury's finding. To the contrary, she made a specific finding that the present value of what I'm ordering is less than the number the jury ordered by something like $300,000. It's absolutely not consistent, and both Verlar and Regent Care say that the court cannot do that. That's an abuse of discretion. And as far as submitting the negligence of Sundance Anesthesia, I should at least mention that because they never pled that. That's an affirmative defense. They did plead, oh, if anybody settles, we want a settlement credit. They didn't mention Sundance and didn't affirmatively plead that Sundance was negligent. The law says a party asserting proportionate responsibility, the party must affirmatively plead it. They say, well, plaintiff pled it because plaintiff's fourth amended petition said a bunch of stuff about Sundance. I want to make one point. They said in their brief that we somehow snuck in the fifth amended petition and that the court didn't grant us leave to do that. The court did grant us leave, and I apologize, Your Honor, it was a few pages past the page they cited. But they said, just want to give you the cite. Now, RR 715, Reporter's Record 715, the court specifically granted us leave to amend, to file the fifth amended petition. And the only thing we said in the fifth amended petition is Sundance, it says that the anesthesiologists were the vice principals of the hospital, whether acting individually or calling themselves Sundance, and that the hospital is directly liable for their conduct as vice principals. Your Honor, if the defendants had pled that, that wouldn't support proportionate responsibility. That wouldn't support a reduction. Pleading that they're entitled to a credit would give them a dollar for dollar credit, that's all. If they'd elected it properly, they didn't. They elected sliding scale. They elected percentage credit, I mean. The rule specifically says an election's binding. It doesn't say if you elect a percentage credit and the jury doesn't put any percentage, you get to default to dollar for dollar. It says it's binding. The only time it defaults to dollar, the statute says, is if no election is made. And that's a little bit contrary to what this court held in Cheshire. I don't think the waiver issue was even raised or briefed in Cheshire. But
You can see, and I'm trying to think of the best way to answer this. If we were to determine that it was reversible error, you know, that these conditions were admitted, I mean, I guess there's no other way around, unless you believe otherwise. Do you agree that we would have to remand? It would have to go back for, you would really have to just start from scratch again.
Which would be terrible, Your Honor.
It's a 10-year-old case?
The county, the litigants, everybody has spent so much time and money, and there is no reason, no court, none of the out-of-state courts that they say this is a case of first impression in Texas, none of those courts said this evidence was improper. None of those courts even insinuated it would mislead a jury or make a jury think something improper.
Well, they did say essentially it's apples and oranges.
Yeah, they said these were all summary judgment cases. What they all say is the fact that a hospital under the Medicare regulations is required to exercise quality assurance over the entire hospital means exactly that.
I think one case almost said specifically that had nothing to do with liability. It was just simply to determine whether or not Medicare or Medicaid applies.
Well, what it says, it doesn't impose, it doesn't make them vicariously liable for the doctor's malpractice.
That they don't say it creates a standard of care, do they?
They do not say that it creates a standard of care, do they?
No, it doesn't create a standard of care. It showed, and nobody said it, we didn't claim it did. We said it shows that Dr. Abukar is right when she says the standard of care is that hospitals must include their contractors in their quality assurance activities. Not only is this a standard of care, this is all over the nation, Medicare requires us to do this. But she said it's not the standard of care because Medicare requires it. Medicare, that alone doesn't make it the standard of care. I think an expert could come in and say, the standard of care requires you to comply with Medicare. And that would be a battle of the experts if she'd said that. I don't think she specifically said that at all. I think she said this is one of the many factors that shows I'm right. The reason I know this is a standard of care is because every hospital that I've been in charge of, including the University of Houston Hospital System compliance and safety programs, it's a standard of care to be sure that your contractors have the right policies and procedures in place so that we can comply with our obligations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal.
I will refer to the briefing because 5 minutes is just not enough to respond. Briefly, just to address their points of error, we pled it. There's evidence. We're entitled to the credit. If you look at our briefing on there, there's absolutely no reason for addressing that issue. As far as the future damages, it was option one. It was $5.8 million. That was non-present value. That was what Mr. Davis testified he wanted. That's what the jury awarded. There's plenty of evidence in the record to support that structure. Getting back to the fundamental issue in this case, we're not independent contractors. Sundance had a responsibility to train and to implement, train, and enforce policies regarding their employed contractors, their employed CRNAs. That's what employers have a responsibility to do. The hospital did not have the responsibility to promulgate, supervise, or enforce policies relative to clinical care for its independent contractors. LaCroix is a completely different animal. First of all, those were hospital policies, and if you look at the policies, they have an obligation to staff a department appropriately, and that's what those policies had. But they were hospital policies that basically said you have to have an anesthesiologist on site. You have to have an anesthesiologist physically supervise the CRNA. That's a staffing issue. Those aren't policies that say here's how you practice medicine, here's how you administer medication, here's how you verify medications. Those are clinical standards that the court, and even in LaCroix, admitted we're not saying you had an obligation to supervise their practice of medicine. The hospital owed a duty to basically say when somebody shows up, you're going to have an anesthesiologist there. Perfectly acceptable and a duty that is imposed on hospitals. What duties are not imposed on hospitals is to be quote unquote responsible, and we can have a conversation about what responsibility doesn't mean liability. Well, it does if somebody was engaged in negligence that you otherwise don't have control over or don't have a duty over. So, and again, I will refer to the reply briefing on this issue, but that's a distinction without a difference. And they said, well, we tried to impose a non-delegable duty by these CMS regulations. The court denied the summary judgment. The court denied the summary judgment, but then allowed CMS regulations in and had the practical effect of the same thing, which is a vicarious liability theory, which also, that's exactly why you had the jury award that you had. The CRNAs, regardless of whether or not they were trained, let's assume for sake of argument, the fact that they didn't know how to do it, the standard of care still required them to do something different. The standard of care still required them to do, the reason they violated the standard of care, we can have a conversation all day long about. But they didn't. They violated the standard of care. Yet the jury said, no, you all were fine. Hospital, Sundance, here's why. Non-delegable duty. CMS, I mean, they argued this in closing. They argued this in closing and said,
is there no way the jury could have potentially have said to themselves, look,
We're not holding them responsible for this. We're putting no responsibility on them because we're taking the responsibility of what they did do and putting it on the hospital.
Well, if they did that, that was improper. Again, because what you're talking about is imputing liability for the actions of an independent contractor to the hospital, which Texas law does not provide. They argued in closing, the hospital saying, hey, this was a Sundance problem. This was a Sundance problem. And they said, you can't do that. They can't stand in front of you and say that. The law says that they can't do that. They cannot do that. That was their closing argument. The law says you can't. Well, the law they're referring to is CMS regulations. But bad facts make bad law. Tragic case. I get that. And I get this is an old case. I get that. But having said that, CMS regulations, the only purpose, there's not a standard of care that's derived from those CMS regulations. The sole purpose was to say you're responsible. Liability, if the CRNAs did it, you're liable. You're responsible. That's contrary to Texas state tort law. That doesn't mean that nobody's responsible. See, Sundance and the CRNAs, they settled. They committed negligence and they settled the case. What this is now, hey, let's see if we can get somebody else to pay us money. And I understand that. That's fine. But you have to establish. You have to go after somebody under an established theory of liability, not create one through regulations. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the oral argument. It's been very helpful. And your case is submitted. And with that, we will take a recess until 2:30.